are with Brenda Peterson, and we're talking about Wild Chorus. And right now we're talking about the Chorus of Wolves. So please help us know about what you have experienced and the people that you've been in contact with that know about the harmonies of the wolves.
So one thing very interesting that I learned from Ellen when we were talking about why wolves howl is that very few wild animals actually respond auditorily to people. Orcas may. Wolves often howl when we howl with them. And that's, I think, an interspecies harmony that has always intrigued me. It's very haunting. It's somewhat melancholy. It can be mournful. It can be celebratory. But they howl not only to declare territory, auditory territory, so other wolves will know where they are, but it's what Ellen calls social glue. So if you and I, as we were in Baja, sing around a campfire and we harmonize, you know, mezzo and soprano and alto, we are experiencing social glue. It brings us together. We have to blend. We have to harmonize. And when you howl to a wolf, that wolf will harmonize with you, which I find extraordinary. And, you know, in our world of social media, everyone is boldly declaring their own opinion, but how many of us are listening and trying to blend and harmonize with another person? I think we're losing that art.
Oh, man, this is such an important point. And I'm thinking as you're saying that, Brenda, and both of us sing in choruses and we've sung and blended our voices down in Baja and other times. There's something so deeply satisfying when we're actually blending our voice with another. It's like a spiritual experience for me.
Yes.
Do you get that too?
Well, they found that our hearts beat as one when we're singing with each other. So when you're in your corral or I'm in my corral and I'm tuning in to fit perfectly with the harmony, because I love singing harmony, then my heart is going to beat with yours. I'm literally physically beating as one with you. And I find that incredibly moving and very hopeful about our species, that our bodies really kind of resonate with each other if we can look for it, if we can find. I think we have a lot of soloists out there in social media and TikTok and other places,
right?
But we don't have people saying, how can I harmonize with you? How can I fit my voice into yours so that it's beautiful?
Right.
Instead of, you know, disharmonic or dissident.
It's so lonely and isolating, isn't it? I'm just thinking about if you weave a tapestry and you only have this one person in the tapestry, how dull that would be. You know,
yes.
It's just like,
yes.
So I want to talk about another experience that you share in the book that just really moved me, that was so powerful. And this is where you work with young people. And at one time it was a, what is it called? Writers in School, I think.
Yes, and Writers in the Schools. Yes.
Writers in the Schools. And this is so, this is what's so great about the arts being in schools. And I'm just such an advocate for that. You can hear my enthusiasm.
And music in schools. Music
is so important. It saved my life in school. Music saved my life, literally. So now here you are. You're doing story time. And you're such an extraordinary storyteller, Brenda. And in your writings, that's what comes out. It's all the storytelling in your writing. So you're working with the kids and you're working with animal allies. And there was one person who was kind of standing apart. I think you use her name, Sarah. And I would love for you to tell the story of Sarah and what you did as a group that was healing for her.
This was a pivotal experience, both as a writer and a teacher. And I walked into this inner city school where there were metal detectors. People had to put their backpacks through. It was a dangerous place. And I asked them to tell me a story. And Sarah, who had stayed very aloof and looked really preoccupied, jumped into the circle. And she said, I was walking with my best friend, Katie, in LA. And all of a sudden, someone leaned out and said, hey, Sarah, hey, Katie. And they shot her and blew her away. And I got hit by a bullet, she said. And when I came to, my best friend was dead. I'm sitting there with these teens in this inner city school thinking, oh my God, what do I do with this? And true to my birthright, I thought we're going to shift. We're going to shape shift into animals because I understand this more as an animal than I do as a human. And I bet they do too. And those kids, they drew masks. They became animals. They became unicorn. They became fish with a soul mirror.
You instructed them that they were going to create a story.
Yes.
Of story of healing, because they never found the guy that did the shooting. And it was kind of left dangling out there, and they're not even searching for him anymore. And so it's kind of all hanging out there. And so you are going to use the power of imagination and storytelling and having each child pick their own personal power animal to be part of this story. So they're going to embody this animal and create this story. So how did it go?
And solve the murder. So they all became these incredibly powerful animals. And we went to the Amazon. And in the Amazon, we had rat, we had unicorn, we had fish who has a soul mirror. And we had all sorts of different, we had lynx and we had jaguar. And Sarah became jaguar. And when we told the story, she jumped into the middle of the circle and they were all growling and hissing and, you know, crying out and howling. And she took over the story. And then she said, who's going to play? Who's going to play the murderer? And of course, that fell to me as the adult. And they decided that the murderer was a man named Carlos, who had mistaken when Katie took a video at a party that she was videoing a drug deal. And so she had to die in this drug thing. And so when she jumped into the middle of that circle of animals, I played Carlos and I had to say, I'm getting away. I'm going deeper into the Amazon. You'll never catch me. You're just animals. And they're all crying out. And then Fish jumped in to the middle of the circle. And she said, no, you're never going to get away. I am Fish and I have my fish mirror. And I am holding it up to you because it shows you your soul. And it will show you everyone you've killed and everyone you've harmed and everyone you've hurt. And it shows you that you killed Katie, who was a good person. And you have to look in this mirror and see your evil self. And Carlos looked into the mirror and said, I cannot go on. I cannot see the evil I have done. And then all the animals ate him. And that has how we solved the murder.
And how did that then affect these young people? I think they were in mid-school. They were young teenagers.
Yes, middle school.
How did that affect them after that. Did you see a shift?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They were much more feral. They were wild. And they didn't get out of their makeup or their outfits or their animal outfits. And the next day they came back, we did the dance of the animals. And I have to just read this little paragraph from the dance of the animals, slowly in rhythm to the deep bell-like beat of my Northwest native drum. Each animal entered the circle, and soon the dance sounded like this. Boom, step, twirl, and slither, and stalk, and snarl, and chirp, and caw, caw, glide, glow, growl, and whistle, and howl, and shriek, and trill, and hiss, hiss. And they stayed in that animal imagination for the rest of the class. And at the very end, when they were going back and they were getting on the buses with their animal masks and their animal, you know, drawings and everything, Sarah came up to me and said, "I am Jaguar. I am a future poet, and I can still see in the dark."
Oh, wow. So he really empowered this young girl that was carrying such a burden, just such a burden that was so unresolved. I just loved that whole story of how you stepped in and you called on your animal friends. I mean, that you live with. I mean, they're part of who your persona,
yes,
Brenda. So you've taken them on. And when you need to be fierce, you can call on that part of yourself, that fierceness. And when you need to be soft and compassionate, you also call in those animals to you. I mean, you have such a repertoire of animal personas that carry you through your life, and now you share those with us in such a deep and effective way. I know I'm just kind of jumping in here and just giving off all this information, but I feel it in my heart. I feel it knowing you and having read so many of your books and knowing you for so many years and knowing the gift that you're giving all of us of this wild nature and not to be afraid of it. Not to be
to
afraid.
To learn.
So let's talk about that in the next segment. I'm here with Brenda Peterson, and she is the author of her newest book, Wild Chorus, Finding Harmony with Whales, Wolves, and Other Animals. And I'm Justine Willow. First, if you'd like to know more about her work, you can go to her website, BrendaPetersonBooks.com, or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Brenda Peterson, and we're talking about Wild Chorus. That's the name of her book and one of her books, her most recent book. And I would love to talk about the chapter that you wrote about that I think is so significant for us today. And that's the need for play what playfulness has to do with our survival, actually, and how it can be a superpower for us. What is the research that you come across that shows us how animals are guiding us to say, hey, we need to play. Playing is part of our survival system.
Yes, that's a chapter called Apprenticeship to Animal Play. And you know, on one of my birthday cakes, someone put on it, I play, therefore I am. And you have to wonder if instead of I think, therefore I am, or I conquer, therefore I am, or whatever, therefore I am, play is a sign of good mental health. It's a good sign of physical health. And in this chapter, I talk about how this little cat that I had, who I rescued, who was very traumatized, the doctor said, the vet said, she cannot play because she's too traumatized. And the day she began to play was the day I knew she would survive, this little Siamese. And there's a wonderful body of work about play among animals and how it teaches them how to be in the world. It teaches them all sorts of things about survival. But for humans, I think to remember how to play is to remember some superpower, as you call it. And you and I were both raised with a lot of play. I was sent off into the woods, basically, all day, making tree forts and, you know, running around and having snowball fights. And I was told, come back for supper. So I was gone all day. And what did we do in the forest? We played. And we didn't always play conquer games. We played hide and seek. We played all sorts of becoming animal games. But I was thinking about this a lot because I studied Stuart Brown, who was a therapist who was called to that terrible first mass shooting in Texas in the Tower. I think one of your friends was there as well.
Right. It was in 1966. Yes.
Yes. And that was one of the first, I think that was the first big mass shooting that we remember. And he was researching why these mass murders, what was the kind of missing link to this young man who had, and now all the mass shootings almost every day. The missing link he found was, quote, the absence of normal play pattern, dysfunctional play. And so when you have dysfunctional play, what you do is turn on others and on the self, suicide and homicide. And I wonder, you know, in Japan, they got rid of recess, and that caused a lot of mental instability.
Really?
When we don't have time to play, when we don't have let our children play, when everything is structured or indoors or on screens, we don't, or we're just doing Pac-Man and shooting everybody.
Or right? even organized games, team sports and all of that. It's so organized. You're talking about free play,
infinite.
Spontaneous play.
Yes. Yes. Infinite play with no winners and no losers.
Yes.
So how creative can you be? How much can you use your imagination? You know, how much can you invent? That's play.
I'm recalling there was a field outside of our, across the street from where I lived. And in the certain times of year, there were these tall reeds that would grow up, and they would be taller than we were. And what we would do as, and just a group of neighborhood kids, we would then take those weeds, we'd stomp down some of them to give a room. And then we would weave the weeds, and we would make this whole structure out of these weeds and make this whole house. And then we'd make a little village. And it was just, somehow as you're talking about this, it's just reminding me of my childhood and that freedom to just make up things.
Yes. Yes. Make up yourself too. You could be anybody. You know, you could imagine going back to the story of the animal dance with the kids in the inner city, one thing that I realized is that though we've long ago left the green forest has never left us.
Oh, lovely.
So it was easy for them, even though they were kids who had maybe never even been camping, they could go back to that primal sense of self. And, you know, I think it's really important to remember that in our deep psyche, we still have animal characters. We still can remember the parts of us that identified with animals. You know, when you were and I in Baja, in those pongas, you know, which is like going through a car wash without a car, because yeah, basically it was just so wet, you know, we were in our slickers and everything. What did we do with the gray whales and their calves? We were probably the first humans they had ever seen. And we were touching them and stroking them, and they were coming up and lifting their babies to our boats. What did we do? We started singing in 3 or 4 part harmony, and they loved show tunes. They loved them more than, I mean, they really loved the upbeat kind of, you know, really playful songs that we were singing.
It was such a delightful, full of delight moment. And it was so spontaneous, and we'd just burst out into song, and we would be sprayed by all of their blowhose were just showering us with their foam and their water and all of that. It was just, and we were just delighting in it. And yes, it was a moment of extreme joy.
And baptism. In the best sense of the word, And in the mess tent at night, you know, the generators would go down. We just had our flashlights and really good food. We were 500 miles away from any, you know, town. And what we would do is play. Remember, we had that whole game with salt shakers.
Oh, we did an imaginary game. Oh, my God. It was so much fun. And we laughed so hard. This at the end of the table, there were maybe 20 people around, and there were maybe 4 or 5 of us at the end of the table just doing this imaginary game, just howled with laughter.
I
thank you for reminding me of that precious moment of play and spontaneity.
Yes, yes. When we don't have play, when we don't celebrate it, when it's always about a winner or a loser, we have reduced play to conquest and not to the imagination.
One thing that I would love to have you just say here as we're kind of coming up against the end of our time together, this moment of our time together, it has to do with your chapter called Superpod. And yes, I was able to attend with you and look off of Laguna Beach, an extraordinary moment of Superpod. So please describe that moment.
Well, my friend Jane Goodall had never seen wild dolphins, you know, in the wild. So our friend Doug Thompson, who, you know, is a wonderful cetacean researcher, and you and I and some other people took Jane off, and my job was to meditate and to call the dolphins. Well, that's a big job because dolphins are busy and they don't necessarily come when we call them. So we were way, way out, and we saw 7 blue whales and all sorts of other cetaceans, but no dolphins. And finally, we came upon a superpod. And I'm just going to read this little sentence here. Imagine dozens of dolphins speeding by in a blur of silver and gray skin, ultrasound and curved fin, streaking past in one breath, as if one body. Their speed and sound registers like a trillion ricochets, tiny vibrations echoing off my ribs, within each lobe of my lungs, and spinning inside my labyrinthian brain like new synapses. I am pod, I felt, with no sense of my individual self. I belong.
Wow. Yes. Yes. And I, you know, I just want to quote you something you hoped for: interspecies family reunion.
Oh,
I,
yes.
You know, I hope with you for that, that we just have that in the Joanna Macy way or the Father Matthew Fox way, you know, council of all beings, that we're just all together again once more. Brenda, thank you so much for being with us today. I've just enjoyed it so much. I've been speaking with Brenda Peterson, and she is an extraordinary award-winning nature writer and memoirist, and written more than 20 books. And her latest book is Wild Chorus, Finding Harmony with Whales, Wolves, and Other Animals. And if you want to know more about her work, you can go to her website, brendapetersonbooks.com. Or you can get there through the New Dimensions website, newdimensions.org. I'm Justine Willis-Toms. You've been listening to New Dimensions. This is program number 3810.
New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over four decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions. New Dimensions is brought to you by Friends of New Dimensions membership support and by Larson Publications, publisher of the book An Open Life, Joseph Campbell in Conversation with Michael Toms. New Dimensions and our quarter-hour New Dimensions Cafe programs are now available worldwide as podcasts. You can find them at the iTunes Store and on many podcast sites and mobile apps. You can also find our podcasts and much more on our website, newdimensions.org. Each week, New Dimensions explores the social, political, scientific, environmental, and spiritual frontiers with some of today's foremost social innovators, thinkers, scientists, and creative artists.
Hello, I'm Mark Coleman, author of A Field Guide to Nature Meditation. Next time on New Dimensions, I'll be talking about mindfulness in nature as a path to joy, wisdom, and wonder.
The Cultures Youth Panel are thrilled to announce that this year's Ignite Festival will be taking over the Cultures Historic Theater at 1895 Venable Street from May 15th to May 18th. Ignite is an eclectic festival that celebrates excellence in the emerging arts and is curated entirely by members of the youth panel at the Cultch, made up of theater performers, filmmakers, writers, poets, dancers, musicians, visual artists, and more, all between the ages of 13 and 30. Performances this year will include short plays, monologues, poetry, some stand-up comedy, live music, dance, a short film program, and drag performances. Tickets are currently available through the Cultures box office, in person, by phone, or online. Tickets are by donation on a sliding scale. Hope to see you there.